Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. All right, everyone, the cameras are rolling. Stick to your scripts. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Excuse him. He's just rattled from his gas attack. It's super producer Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. If you would listen to a pod, well, how happy we would be. But heads up, for as long as we're together, we will spell Stoop Kids with a Z. We will spell Stoop Kids with a Z. I'm not going to do the rest. I'm not confident that works, but I wanted to get Mitski on the pod.
I'm just thrilled. Honestly, I've never been happier.
Yeah, maybe, you know what, if we don't get sued, maybe we'll play that as the outro tune. I'm gonna manifest that into existence now. It should be noted, though, we are here today to talk about Mitski, but mostly Hey Arnold, episode 95, specifically of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 5, episode 15, going by production code order. We're going to start with episode A, as we always do. That episode is called A Day in the Life of a Classroom. Or if you're Paramount Plus, the name of this episode is Simmons Documentary. Riveting stuff. Original air date, November 15th, 2003. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. After Mr. Simmons wins an award, a TV station plans to do a documentary on a normal day in his class. At first, Mr. Simmons just wants to keep it normal. But when Arnold mentions that millions of people will be watching them on TV, Simmons makes his students rehearse a quote-unquote perfect day. Scripted, of course. And the people who scripted this episode and directed it, respectively, Joseph the Purdman Purdy was the scripter, and the pre-scripter, question mark, is Frank Weiss. So shout outs to them, shout outs to everybody, in particular Harry for the moment, who's gonna open us up with some takes on this episode. Harry, what'd you think of this one?
Hey, thanks, Cody. First of all, 2003 seems so late to me. I don't know why. Like, I know that this is when the season aired, but for whatever reason, you hearing that just now really threw me for a loop. Maybe it's because I don't remember this episode at all, I guess. So maybe I like missed it during its original runtime or something. It's too bad that I missed it, because I think it's quite a good episode. I think that's something that this episode does really well, and I think we'll talk about this with sort of variable levels of success, I guess, in this sort of twofer, is that it just like utilizes each of the characters that we've come to know and love really, really well in a way that is very Hey Arnold and very distinct. I think in particular, what I really love about this episode is that Simmons is the ostensible quote unquote antagonist of this episode, or he's the sort of like cause of the grief or the stress or the problem of the episode. But they can do that without sort of like making him unsympathetic, right? I think that like that sounds like a really simple thing to pull off, but I feel like especially for like an 11-minute kid show, like giving us this character that we know and love and then making him sort of like treat all of his students poorly and react under stress without making him sort of like hateable, and in fact without sort of breaking character at all, makes a lot of sense, right? It's like this is an episode that feels like it very organically arises from Simmons' personality as it has been established throughout the series, and because of that we can sympathize with it and understand it, and it just makes for a really great dynamic. And I think that all of the characters in this episode are similarly well rendered, right? Like I love Rhonda asking if she can have a cameo and then like getting all dressed up. I love Harold completely flubbing all of his lines and driving Simmons nuts. I even love Principal Wartz putting on the toupee. I feel like that's kind of a callback to longtime fans. And then, of course, Helga acting so put out and constantly having sort of like a an aside. So, yeah, I think that it's kind of a simple episode, ultimately. And its moral sort of wraps up a little neatly, maybe a little bit more neatly than I would have liked, though I don't really know how I would change it. I think that they do a really good job of spelling it out. I really like the Arnold speech where he tells Simmons that Simmons doesn't need to be sort of afraid that he's not going to comport himself well in the documentary and everybody likes him. I think this is probably the last Simmons episode. And I think it's a really good send up to Simmons as a character, both like the good and the bad of Simmons. Right. And in the process, I think it tells a really good story about sort of like something that I think would be really resonant to a lot of kids. Right. Which is this idea that like under pressure, you feel this great anxiety to sort of perform or to put your best foot forward and be inorganic. And that's not really the right way to actually like put your best foot forward. So I think that ultimately I was really impressed with this episode. And I'm really interested to hear what you guys think.
Yeah. Yeah. As we all collectively literally put our best feet forward. I know you can't see it, listener, but I'm putting my right foot just a little bit further ahead than my left. And rest assured, that's how I'm at my best. Emily, how are you at your best? And also, what do you think about this episode? Daunting questions.
I wouldn't say I'm at my best because I am hungover today, but this episode is decent. I think that the energy is a bit weird throughout it, which is just the anxiety that we're feeling on behalf of Simmons. So it makes sense that the energy is like that, I suppose, now looking back, because it's like through his, anxious mindset of going into this documentary that he wants to be perfect. I think that, I don't know, I also just feel like we're very much at the end of the whole series, and I don't know, I'm not laughing a lot in this one or another one. Not that they have to make me laugh, but this was more about just feeling the stress of the teacher. I think the character, the kid characters just have like really, really small moments that don't add up to much of like anything particularly satisfying in this one for me, but it's a fine ep. And I like that it's like a Beatles title, The Day in the Life, or the actual title, not the Paramount Plus version. It made me think of a different Beatles song, which is the Act Naturally song that Ringo sings. They're gonna put me in a movie. That song. But you gotta act naturally, which is so hard for Simmons and co to do here. And also, yeah, perfectionism is a beast. It sucks. I feel like a lot of kids in school struggle with it, and just anyone in life, I guess, in different ways, or maybe in a certain facet of your life, you feel more of that tendency to have things be perfect or in a way that you see in your head. And it's hard to get that across, especially for Simmons with the kids. But I don't have a whole lot to say about it other than what I've said. I think it's nice he's Citywide Teacher of the Year. Citywide, even. I wonder how many schools there are in Hillwood. And I like that the documentary that airs at the end is on the Knowledge Channel. So that's kind of like a little PBS nod. And the whole crew, I suppose, is sort of like a PBS crew that's filming it. So kind of nice. Not a funny one. It's fine. It's a fine episode. It's okay.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. You two set up this episode pretty well. I came away with mixed feelings because I actively dislike so few episodes of Hey Arnold. I don't feel like I dislike this episode, but it was tough for me to say like I had fun watching this if and only if et cetera. Simmons' characterization was, I don't know, I thought he'd be better than this. you know, like he is a very self-assured character, and I did not, kind of like Harry, like you said, I don't know if I have a great memory of this episode. This by and large was probably the first time that I ever watched it. I did not see this particular trajectory going this way, where he just kind of lost that self-assurance. One thing that I kind of started thinking about, where it's not so much that he lost like the confidence or like any of that was shaken. It could have been just me playing the card I always do. Perhaps it was the mortifying ordeal of being known. The fact that people would have eyes on him, and you know, there's his classroom is his haven, and the fact that so many eyes would be brought into that classroom maybe kind of caused him to start unraveling. There's maybe a reasonable argument to be made for that. But it wasn't necessarily fun for me to see Mr. Simmons go the Heart of Darkness, you know, Abed as Mad Director kind of route, where he's trying to, you know, script everything that's happening. The child moments are really good. A lot of them have already been called out. And the fact that the writing is very plainly on the wall for how poorly this is going to go, I think is a point in this episode's favor. It's not like, you know, the students are largely buying into this scheme and think it's a good idea. So I'm very, you know, I'm happy for that. And I'm happy that, as it's also been brought up, that Simmons is not painted as somebody who should be hated in this episode. He's an antagonizing force, but he's not a villain. He's somebody to be pitied for sure. There's a lot going on there. So not to tip my and our hand too much, but with the next half episode as well, kind of like what Emily was saying, you know, it is obviously we are approaching the end of the series, and I couldn't help but feel like the main subjects of this episode and the next episode, two, I think, like pretty beloved characters, one like actually beloved in this
in
case,
very different ways, right?
in very different ways. One beloved for beloved reasons, and one beloved for you love to hate him kind of reasons. And not to say that these were stories that were rushed by any means, but it did feel sort of like an obligatory. We need to give these characters one last go. And you know, for whatever polish or lack of polishes on these episodes, I don't know. Again, not that these are even bad episodes, we've seen, I think, better instances of these characters. And again, it might just be me not having a good time seeing Simmons not be his old Simmonsy self, but there is a purpose and value in seeing our favorite characters in unsavory lights. So I don't know, points in this episode's favor for sure.
Yeah, I really like what you said about Simmons being sympathetic. I think he's also sort of like empathetic in that he is literally the sort of proxy for the audience. Like, we learn the lesson that he learns, right? He's the POV character. Like Emily said, the whole episode kind of takes place from his own anxious POV. I think it's really funny, and even though it's sort of out of character, but it's a good enough gag that I like it, that Arnold comes up to Simmons and he's just like, wow, think about all the people that are going to be watching this. It's like, why would Arnold say that at that point? Like, what a weird thing. But anyway, I think that without getting sort of too galaxy-brained about it, I guess the reason I really like this episode is because it feels like such an appropriate manifestation of the like specificities of Simmons' character, right? Like, I'm thinking specifically about probably the other big Simmons episode, right? The Thanksgiving episode. And the man in that episode is the man in this episode, right? Like, it's so clear to see how somebody who sort of like is, unfortunately, because he's a queer man, right? Like, he's used to performing, and he has imposter syndrome, and he's afraid of being sort of judged or of afraid that he's not going to measure up in the eyes of authority figures, right? Like his dad. And I'm not saying that was even consciously what the writers were doing here, but like a guy who struggles with his own sort of like self-esteem and his own sense that like, I have to do really, really well so that I can, not only so that I can show myself that I'm good enough, but just so that I can show these people that I think are judging me all the time that I'm good enough, right? He's very anxious about presenting himself in this perfect way. And I think that really comes across here and makes this not only sort of like sympathetic, but also like deeply relatable, right? Like, I just really related to like his anxieties throughout this episode. And I think that like, even though I agree with you that the anxieties themselves make this episode kind of a little bit of a rough watch, right? Just because, like you said, like Simmons is usually such a likable character and such a like pointed antidote to many of the other authority figures and adults in this show, that to see him sort of like manifest in these ways that are very characteristic to who he is, but are troubling and problematic and lead him to act in ways that are not sort of like his best self and even to sort of mistreat the kids is tough. I just think that like, I kind of commend the episode for getting to this point, right? Like it feels like a really, I don't know, brave isn't necessarily the right term, but I guess an ingenious way to leverage a character in a way that we're not used to. You know what I mean? I feel like Simmons is always sort of like well-meaning and maybe a little incompetent at worst, right? But here it's like his own anxieties are really making him something kind of ugly. And the fact that they can do that while still making him Simmons, and we can still sort of like learn this lesson, and he can swallow his pride, which is another thing I really like about this episode, and just straight up come out and say like, hey, I screwed this up and like we're gonna fix it now. I found that to be a really refreshing ending as well. So yeah, I don't know. I think I sympathize with both of you in that like I agree with you, Emily. I don't think I laughed at any point during this episode, except when Curly was dressed up as Hamlet. That got a hearty chuckle out of me, but you know, I'm a sucker for Curly. But other than that, it's kind of a tough ep to watch, but I think it's a really like worthy addition to Hey Arnold, which maybe it's maybe I've got the soft bigotry of low expectations for season five all over again, but like I don't know, I think that like if we are coming up against the end of the series and we get episodes like this, I think we're doing pretty well personally.
I think that's, yeah, I think that's a pretty diplomatic place to be, which is to say I agree with that. Like all things considered, approaching the end, there's clearly not phoning it in, which is really nice. My two on the note of audible laughs, I think I would have said I didn't laugh at all. My two audible laughs that I wrote down: when Harold holds down a burp and like makes a point of saying I held down a burp, and then he burps anyway. Extremely funny. And then the fact that Helda smacking Harold as she approaches the whiteboard made it to air in that news package. And I rewound to make sure I heard it correctly. But those are my two audible laughs. Question for you both: this like teachers, you know, teacher of the month, teacher of the year type awards, were those a thing where y'all came from? I got thinking about that, and it was a big, like it brought forth a few different flavors of nostalgia waves, because like I could picture myself being like, I had a teacher that won teacher of, I think it was probably teacher of the month. That's how they did them in my hometown. I can't remember if I was in her class or if I like knew about it in advance, but like I knew she had won, and it was always kind of not a big deal, but it was always advertised like the, you know, local newspaper in the front, you know, front page or whatever of the, either the paper proper or the whatever section it was, you would see like, oh, teacher of the month, was that from my school? Do I know this teacher? That was always like kind of an event for my like small, big hometown. Yeah, I don't know, like a few different intersections of feelings and nostalgia. I don't know. Was that a thing where y'all were from, or was that not really something that like districts and whatever focused on with y'all?
You know, that's a great question, Cody, because like, I'm pretty sure it was. I don't remember it, but like now that I think about it, like I remember attending some kind of like ceremonies during school, or maybe just like announcements or some derivation thereof, where like one teacher per grade would get the award, or maybe one teacher per school or something. I distinctly remember a teacher who hated me in fourth grade, Mr. Lund. Everybody else loved him, and he and I had a very adversarial relationship, because I was very much in the having undiagnosed ADHD period of my childhood, and kind of generally bouncing off the walls and making trouble for everybody. And he didn't like that very much. So I was always a little put out that that everybody liked that guy so much. But I think I remember like him winning some kind of award, and me just sort of like in the background, like his, like a villain, something sort of like cursing his name and shaking my fist and whatnot. But I think that there was one of those. And I think I remember one other teacher I had winning something along those lines. I think it was like right before retirement, but yes, definitely a thing. And I wonder, I think that it's probably good, right? It's probably good to have kids like see teachers get awards and stuff. That's kind of nice. That's maybe a hot take or maybe an unconsidered take, but it seems like a good thing.
Yeah, teachers deserve awards and probably a lot more money than they're currently making. Yeah, no, all good things for sure. Emily, I know your track record is perhaps a little bit different from ours, but the idea of teachers getting awards, does that ring any bells as far as like memories growing up in various schools is concerned, or was that not really a thing?
Yeah, I really can't remember, but I think it was a thing. I think student of the month or teacher of the month, maybe that was something. I feel like there was some sort of acknowledgement on behalf of your grades and then whatever teachers probably did the best at standardized test scores, at least in Texas.
Oh, Bush wow, administration Bush era. Yeah. You love to hear it. Wow, we're really kids of the 90s, huh?
No child left behind. Yeah. I do think that was probably the case, though, at least in elementary school in Houston, Texas. I don't know about my private schools. I'm not sure. I know so many schools, I can't remember.
Yeah, extremely fair. I don't fault you for that. Man, God, nah, standardized tests. Are we going to get away from talking about school? Any other lingering threads or shout-outs that y'all had from this particular day in the life of a classroom?
I guess shout outs to, what was the guy's name? The director? I can't remember. He had a first name that I can't put my finger on.
O-S-C-I-R?
Daniel. Yeah, that's right. Which struck me as so funny that he was like, call me Daniel. And then for the rest of the episode, everybody's like, excuse me, Daniel. Like every time they said it, I got douche chills for some reason. I don't know why exactly. I love that he wants to be like the anti-Herzog documentarian where he's like, no, I just like, I'm supposed to be all natural. Like, don't, I'm a fly on the wall. You're not supposed to see me. I remember thinking that was funny, and I was like, oh wow, this guy's got the general approach that our man Herzog would not be happy with. So shout outs to Daniel, the traditionalist documentarian, I guess.
Yes, Daniel with the Knowledge Channel. I'd just say shout out to Mr. Simmons, Teacher of the Year, citywide. I think he's an awesome character and dude, and it's really cool that there's, you know, some queer representation, even though it's a little under wraps. It's, you know, kind of secret-y, but you sort of know that he's maybe on that in the community. But I just wish this episode was like more fun for him as a send-off, but I just wanted to shout him out in general. He's a great character. And also shout out the Beatles. They never really got their due. They never really got their citywide awards or what have you, but they're a great little band, and the title of this one sort of goes out to them.
You know what, that's a pretty good call. Maybe someday they'll be appreciated in all the ways that they should. In the meantime, however, I gotta go type up a bunch of individualized scripts on a typewriter by hand, and it's going to be very twee and cute, but it's just going to take me all of the rest of the night. I can't take a break. I really gotta get on it right now, but I'll make my way back here eventually. Don't touch that dial. We'll be back with episode B. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 95B up next, and that episode is called Big Bob's Crisis. Original air date, November 15th, 2003. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. After a day of work where Big Bob is particularly mean and bad-tempered to some patrons and an employee, he suffers what he thinks is a heart attack while at a Texas-style restaurant. Turns out it was just gas. But while he wasn't, that was in parentheses, that's canon. Thanks, Wikipedia. But while he was unconscious, he had an epiphany and decides to become nicer when he goes overboard and announces the family will be walking to Oregon to join a commune. Helga takes it into her own hands to get her father back to his old blowhard self. One of the better summaries we've had in a while. Shouting out the folks who made this episode possible way back when in 2003 are Frank Weiss, who directed, and Michelle Lamoureux and Joseph the Purdman Purdy, who shared co-writing credits. And let's get into it. Emily, we'll start with you. What did you think about Big Bob's Crisis?
Yeah, thank you for asking, Cody. I think that this is kind of like the Within You, Without You episode between the Beatles, A and B. I'm sorry, I can't podcast today. But I noticed that also Joe Purdy and Michelle Lamoureux have teamed up quite a bit lately. And I just think that's neat. I don't have anything else to say about it. Just that's cool that there are sometimes more of a team of writers on an ep instead of just the one lead or multiple taken, like more than two taken stage. So cool. They're like a team, I guess, more so in season five. Or even in the past, I don't remember. I think it's funny that we start out inside the Beeper store. I don't know that we've ever been in the actual store that Bob owns. We've been in his like office with Miriam when she was the Beeper Queen, but I don't think we've actually been in the retail environment, so kind of funny. I also think we get a lot of Big Bob facts. Just, you know, some fun little tidbits about him throughout the entire episode. We learn stuff like he loves Wheel of Fortune and he could, join a sort of a culty hippie movement. The, what is it, Friendship, Happy Sunshine, Friendship Family Band or something like that. He wants everyone to meditate once he gets on board there. That's pretty funny. And kind of goes in on minimalism, gives everything away. Yeah, wants to, I mean, he gets it to a good place by the end of the episode, but before I get there, what happens? What is in my notes? He has a meat-induced heart attack. He has a heart attack because of whatever he was eating. And then sort of a Scrooge McDuck come to Jesus moment, where he sees himself and we have him in the dreamscape where he's an angel flying over all of his harsh actions where he's just been mean to everybody around him. So he's got this sort of a near-death experience situation before he finds out about, you know, the hippy-dippy cult and all of that. Funny to see him getting into playing the sitar and, yeah, just leading the simple life, getting the whole family except for Helga on board. Olga was making me laugh out loud the most in this episode, because she has one line where she goes up to Miriam and she's like, "Did you fix Daddy, Mommy?" And that one really made me laugh. It's such a funny line. And no, Miriam did not fix Daddy, but I think Bob gets to an all right place by the end of this. Not sure if any of what I'm saying is usable for the pod. Let's see. Big Bob's life changes. By the end of it, he wants to work 6 days a week instead of 7 days. Huge improvement there. He doesn't want to move and he wants a veggie garden in the backyard to keep the yurt and to go back to his regular food, though, his regular diet. I think this is a fun one. It's some good facts about Bob. It's a close look again at the Patakis, which will maybe be our last closer look at their family unit before the whole series wraps up. So this is more, yeah, Bob's POV. And yeah, I thought it was fun.
Nice. Thank you. This episode is in Big Bob's POV, but what about Harry's POV? Harry, what did you think about episode B, B for Bob?
Wow. That was immaculately done, Cody. Thank you. It's interesting. Maybe hearing Emily talk about it makes me like this episode more than I think I liked it while I was watching it. And maybe I'm grading it on an unfair curve now that I think about it some more, but maybe it was because I was coming off of the Mr. Simmons episode. And so I was like very, very attuned to the idea that these are sort of send-off episodes, like you alluded to last time, Cody. And I just couldn't help but feel like this was like a deeply unsatisfying Big Bob / Pataki send-off. Just because, like, for one thing, it's a very strange episode. You kind of think it's going to be A Christmas Carol, right? Or It's a Wonderful Life or whatever with Big Bob. And then it's not. And then it's like a weird cult thing. I found the whole cult thing very unnecessary and sort of like kind of undermining a lot of what was happening in the episode. Although I do think it's kind of ironic and cool that like the place they end up getting is that like Helga has to bring her dad back. But I don't like the way that they ultimately landed on that, just because I think that like they've done this way better earlier on. There's that one episode with Big Bob and Helga where they do an amazing job of illustrating their relationship and how fraught and problematic it is, because Big Bob is essentially an absentee parent, or at least a neglectful parent to Helga. But she has like sort of nonetheless learned from him and nonetheless values their relationship, and he does hers, even though like it's not an ideal relationship, right? And I found that very like resonant and very true to life. And like, I really didn't see almost any of that in this episode, you know? I mean, like that last speech that Helga gives to Big Bob, there was a point where I was like, who are these characters I'm watching, right? Where Helga's like, you know, I really rely on you to be my dad, and I just hope that you can find your way back there, because I really, you know, I count on you or whatever. And it's like, it's earnest and it's emotional, but it's also like, who is this person? Like, that didn't sound like Helga to me. It sounded like weirdly performative in a weird, like in a bad way, in my opinion. Again, maybe I'm being too harsh, but I just like, I would have liked it a little bit more if like Helga would have been a little bit more true to herself in how she approached the problem. I guess, and like maybe even if her sort of like attempts to get Bob back had worked or something, not to play armchair director, but I just felt like I like the idea that ironically Big Bob, when he sort of like becomes an anti-materialist, or when he sort of like turns over a new leaf, he gets even worse, right? He grows even more extreme. I love the irony of Helga having to like walk back this guy that she doesn't even really like, and that she doesn't really get along with, just because she needs things to go back to normal. I just didn't really like how it ended up playing out that much. It felt like it really like sanded down the characters in a way that I wasn't really happy with. And like, I think that it made even the sort of like the conclusion this episode comes to, where like Emily sort of like laid out, Bob is like, oh, I'm going to work six days a week instead of seven, and I'm going to have a vegetable garden, and we're keeping the yurt. It's like, all that stuff was funny. And he finally calls Helga Helga, right, at the end of the episode, which is good. And I don't know, like, I think that like, including the full Pataki family in this episode was really, really the right choice, because Olga's so funny in it. Miriam is really funny. Probably the funniest segment of the entire episode is when first Miriam and then Olga go to try to reconvert or deprogram Big Bob, and he ends up like masterfully converting them to this cult. I thought that was really funny. Ultimately, I just think that like where we wanted to get, or where I think in my mind this episode wanted to get, would be this like complex confrontation between Helga and Big Bob, and also between Helga and Helga in a way, right? Where it's sort of like Helga has to like reconcile the fact that like she and her dad don't get along with this idea that like, but nonetheless, like she values their relationship such that it is, and she needs him in some way. And I just think that like having this weird, like come to Jesus moment for Helga, where she has to like eat crow and be like, I think you're like a good dad, and I love you, and I want you in my life again. And it's like, I don't know, that just didn't sit right with me, I guess. I wish that they would have handled that a different way. And it kind of like, it had the effect of making what could have, I think, been a really nuanced and interesting episode about the Pataki family dynamics, which are themselves probably the most complex familial dynamics in the show, if not the most complex character dynamics in general in the show, into something that was like a lot more straightforward in a way that made it feel a little bit less than Hey Arnold to me, which is, I realize, kind of an ironic place for me to be, because I usually love Helga episodes and I love Pataki episodes. But maybe I just sort of, like, I had great expectations for this episode that it didn't really fully deliver on, in my opinion, especially considering, like you had noted, Cody, that this is probably the last Big Bob episode and sort of the note that the Patakis are going to go out on, right? I just wish that it had sort of, like, done right by the history of that complication, I guess, if that makes sense.
It does. I think that's an extremely fair approach. I enjoyed this episode, and under the framework of, like, this being a send-off for the Patakis, I think I actually really like it as a send-off. I'll get there eventually. Just some things that really struck me about this episode. The we start out very hammy, very with, like, over the top Christmas Carol kind of vibe, like the story of the Christmas Carol, not like Christmas Carolers, but like the sort of, I, again, without really a great memory of this episode from previous viewings when I was younger, didn't really know what to expect, but Big Bob is this Ebenezer Scrooge type, and it's literally, you know, please, sir, can I have some more type, you know, little brat who walks in, and then seeing them all go talk to, you know, somebody else in the parking lot. Just like, hey, my crippled mother, here's a broken beeper for your birthday. It's like, oh, nope, that did that nice man give you a donation? Nope. And he was our last hope. So now we're going to starve. Just very over the top. I feel like, you know, this episode knows what it was doing in that regard. You know, that and Bob's hospital gown not having a back, the fart noises, like all of this feeds into, as it's been mentioned by others here, that that this takes a very different tone from typical Helga and Pataki family episodes at large, and ones that we've spent a lot of time talking about. And I talk about that fight or flight response that kicks in whenever all the Patakis are together, especially in their household. But we get to a place, you know, as we go, I realize that, you know, Miriam is, you know, sort of playing parody at this point. Olga has definitely gotten to a point of parody, which I completely enjoyed. Kind of like Emily, Olga was a big high point for me this episode. Not kind of with us and, you know, the show and everything in between, kind of reconciling and realizing what the sibling relationship is between those two. We can now deploy Olga in other ways that are just her leaning on, like, naivete, the fact that Helga is smarter than Olga, even though everybody sees Olga as the smarter, more brilliant, brighter one. And, you know, Olga's now, she's just a dumb adult like every other adult on the show. And just her wearing, again, her naivete on her sleeve. Everybody in the Pataki family kind of plays for parody, even Big Bob, and him waffling between these two extremes. You know, as this went, you know, I didn't realize until after the fact, but that fight or flight response didn't kick in. And it is, to your point, Harry, like, very, it's very obvious how, you know, not, we're used to these Pataki episodes being very heavy and grounded in this undercurrent of remembering that, like, everything that these people do feeds in largely negatively to Helga's upbringing. And that informs a lot of who she is. And by the end of this episode, there's nothing supremely massively changed. Helga tries to, you know, reach out to her father, and I sort of read it as more, I don't know, not like she's, again, her realizing, and again, as y'all have been talking about, him going between these two extremes of character. And I think Helga wanting to, you know, this version of her father isn't her best, isn't his best version, and the version that she can most rely on, and depend upon and count on to be like that solid figure in her life. But this is a worse version than the version that she was used to. Not that that version is great, but, like, you know, maybe we get back to there, you know, go, and I don't know, just it's not good watching Helga plead for something that, like, isn't, that she knows is probably not in her best interest, but it is better. And by the end of it, we see more progress from Big Bob developing as a grown-up, as a parent, a parental figure than we get in any other episode of his on the show. This sort of, I anticipated him just falling into like dirty, menacing capitalist role, which isn't to say that he's not, but like he vocalized and they play his punchlines, but I don't know, like vocally advocating for himself to work less. And sure, he's going to keep the yurt. Why not? Just like your little jokes here and there. I guess I came away with that okay with like progress. And that is, it's not, certainly not a solution to Helga's problems that she faces being in this household of hers, but it is closer to a step in the right direction than I feel like we've seen in many other cases. Thinking about the episodes where Olga is shipped off to Alaska because they could not work out and like make any sort of headway and just sort of giving up. It's just like, well, we need to create this huge chasm between us because there's literally no other option. I reached the end of this episode and I kind of felt like, you know, the entire weight didn't, you know, it wasn't lifted off of my or what I perceived to be Helga's shoulders, but it was like, it was a little something. It was, I don't know, a little note of a small, tiny optimism that I was very on board with, but I would not fault anybody for not liking this episode because it is kind of a 90 degree pivot from what we're used to with the Patakis. But I don't know, I've gone on long enough, but that's kind of where I came away with this one.
Yeah, considering like you're saying that they're all sort of parodies of themselves a bit, at least especially in Olga and Bob's case, and the note of how Bob is such a capitalist, it's funny that he doesn't end up selling yurts at the end of it. I mean, becoming a yurt salesman.
That's a good point.
Could have gone in a whole different direction there.
That would have been so funny. I guess I've always sort of been of two minds about this episode, but I do like a lot of what you're saying, Cody, especially like one thing I do really like about this episode is it has like one of the most honest, mature conversations we ever see between Helga and Arnold. And that is what gives Helga the inspiration to sort of confront her dad with this sort of uncharacteristic honesty and vulnerability and earnestness. And I really like this as sort of a stealth culmination of Helga's arc with Arnold, where like now Helga is like actually consciously understanding that like, oh, I like Arnold so much because he brings like the best parts out of me, right? He brings out my honesty and my vulnerability, and like he allows me to express those without feeling self-conscious or feeling self-loathing about those things or feeling judged. So I think it makes a lot of sense that Arnold is sort of the catalyst for this, as he so often is, right? I just think that, I don't know, I think that like, maybe I just wanted to see a little bit of the other side, right? Because so much of the Patakis has sort of been subversive in this sense that, like, there is a limit to Arnold's sort of humanist positive vibe, right? His positivity and, like, what it can affect. And, like, actually, like, broken families are not something that you can just sort of, like, honest your way out of. You can't sort of, like, give a speech and make Big Bob a good dad, right? I think that that's actually like kind of one of the big ideas of the Patakis. And I kind of like that, like in the absence of something like that, Helga actually has to sort of find and navigate her own way of coping with her family. And that's something that I've always really been drawn to about these storylines, right? Is this idea that like, oh, I mean, like, and maybe Arnold actually has something to learn from Helga too, right? Or like maybe Helga has like this perspective that is missing from somebody like Arnold, right? I think we've always talked about how like Arnold's stories tend to be so straightforwardly triumphant and optimistic, and Helga's are always like so much more real, right? And I think you're right, Cody, in the sense that like this doesn't feel super optimistic because like you had said, like basically what happens at the end of this episode is like Big Bob is like, oh, I learned my daughter's name. And like, now I'm going to work 6 days a week. And it's like baby steps, right? And like, I think that that's good optimism. I think that it's warranted optimism and earned within the confines of the show and the episode. I just think that there's something to this idea that like, I wanted, maybe I'm just saying that I wanted Helga to like be a little bit more introspective, or I wanted to see the conflict of their history play out a little bit more than it did, instead of sort of necessarily reducing that conflict down to something that is not necessarily larger than the confines of the episode. But again, like, as I'm saying that, I'm realizing, like, that's a lot to ask of an 11-minute episode. And especially an 11-minute episode that has some really interesting things going on, right? Like, for instance, I think that, like, in a weird postmodern sense, this idea that, like, we're going to do Christmas Carol, but actually he gets worse and he gets weird. And that's what Helga doesn't like. It's like kind of brilliant, right? Like it's a real subversion of that idea. And I think that that speaks to the Pataki dynamic really well, because I love this irony that like Helga now has to confront the fact that she wants her old life back, right? The last thing she thought she would want. I guess I just wanted that explored a little bit more. But I, you know, I mean, I think that the conversation we've been having is sort of evidence that, like you summed up so well, Cody, at the end of our last segment, like this show is not resting on its laurels, right? It's not running on empty. Like this is a sort of episode that prompted a real like nuanced discussion of how the Patakis function and how we think they should function. And we got to a place where we all kind of disagree about the episode, which is awesome in my opinion, right? It's like, it would be easy for Hey Arnold to just sort of be like, well, like we're going to rattle off like the hits, right? We're going to do Grandpa's Packard, where it's just sort of like, you know, victory lap, and just sort of like a nice little send off to our characters. But, so in that way, I think that this is maybe a better final Pataki episode than I gave it credit for. Even if it's a little bit more, summarizing, I guess, than I would have liked it to have been, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think so. Yeah. If anything, and this gets into, I guess, my one shout out, but if recent episodes included, but and especially this episode, making me think of old episodes of The Simpsons that I have not visited in a while. One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish is one from The Simpsons. I don't know. You can look it up and watch it. I'm not going to bother trying to describe it now. It's been a while. And I don't know. You should also just go watch it, because it's one of the best episodes of The Simpsons. And it gets into some similar narrative and thematic things as to what this episode is either succeeding or not succeeding in doing, or at least, you know, tackles. Kind of a big swing of an episode, Big Bob's Crisis is. But, you know, these wild swing episodes really get me thinking about The Simpsons for whatever reason, which I guess is a compliment. Arguably pretty successful television program. But yeah, that's my one shout out. Any other lingering threads or things that y'all want to call out from this crisis at Big Bob's?
Yeah, I guess I had a couple of shout outs. Shout out to the sitar, right? I think Emily already shouted that out, but there's this incredible quintessential Olga line where Helga's like, "What is Dad doing?" And Olga's like, "It seems to me he's making eclectic music on an Indian sitar." And it's like, thank you, Olga, for describing that with your college education and brilliance. I found that so funny. Lots of great funny lines in this episode. Let's see. Shout out to the sweat factory or the sweatshop joke that is made in like Big Bob's Come to Jesus sequence. I thought that was so funny and so wildly dark, even for Hey Arnold. Like the employee tosses out on his butt. He like looks at a picture of his like eight kids and he's like, "Well, that was my last chance. I guess I'm gonna have to get the kids working at a sweatshop again." And it's like, "Oh my god!" Like that's wild. And then Big Bob's like, "I'm a monster," and I thought that was really funny. And one last one, which is my favorite shot in this episode, when Helga like gets a rack of ribs and a bunch of fries, and she points a fan towards the yurt so that her dad will smell those and go back to his old self. It backfires, and they cut from him sort of like expressing disgust at the smell and closing the yurt to Helga sort of like peering over the fence. And her nose is like Kilroy, like hanging down over the fence. And she's got this big scowl on her face. Meanwhile, like the fan is still going and the meat is blowing. And I thought that shot was like so, so funny and so well drawn. So, you know, it's a good episode, right? Like maybe it's not exactly the episode that I needed it to be or wanted it to be or whatever. But like it's really sharp in spite of that.
I'm going to go with a shout out to the Wheel of Fortune sound effects. That put me right back in my grandparents' house hearing that little do-do-do-do.
Brilliant. Wow. I didn't even register that. That is kind of a wild fun thing to include in an episode like this. Wheel of Fortune. You know what's not like a game show? Listening to this podcast, because you always know you're going to get something good. Everyone's a winner. Am I right? Thank you, dear listener, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mackin. You can find me on Twitter at Chitaki Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me at Emily Suey on Instagram.
That's right. And now, oh yes, here we go. Show me the way, Earth Flower.